1001 Songs, is of course a book written by Toby Cresswell, the esteemed Australian music journalist. He said, what did he say? I'm going to see if I can say this without reading it, seeing as I've been saying it all this time. Each of these songs, some of them were truly awful, but each of them would broaden your palate and increase your artistic appreciation, or some fairly profound phrase similar to that. The first song that he has got to broaden your artistic appreciation of music over the past while... tonight is Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five with Caledonia. Born in 1908, Louis Jordan was a pivotal figure in American popular music. He learned his trade in the blackface minstrel shows with some of the seminal blues singers such as Ma Rainey. Jordan's taste tended towards jazz, but his group, the Timpani Five. In the immediate post-war era, Jordan refined his jump blues style and added a bit of jazz and created R&B. The jazz scene at the time was dominated by bebop, which appealed almost exclusively to intellectuals and beatniks. Jordan, with his crazy dancing and pumping bands and comical songs, led the way into a new style of American music. "I wanted to play for people, for millions, not just a few hep cats," he said. Indeed, five of Jordan's early singles sold over a million copies. Although credited to his wife, Fleecy Moore, Caledonia is one of Jordan's most popular songs. When his wife left him, she also took the publishing income from the songs, such as this hit. Some credit for the Jordan sound here should go to Milt Gabler. After Decca and Jordan parted ways in 1965, Gabler produced the groundbreaking sides for Bill Haley and the Comets, and the similarities are there to be heard. Gabler even admitted the Comets sessions were based around the feel of the Timpani Five. "We've been going with the Jordan shuffle rhythm, you know, and darted around eight notes and sixteenths," which is quavers and semi-quavers for those of you out there. He told NME, we'd build on it. "I'd sing Jordan's riffs to a group of that would be picked up by the electric guitars and tenor sax, and they got a sound that had to drive with the Timpani Five and the colour of the country and western." Although he predates most rock and roll, Louis Jordan's jive blues have lasted considerably better than most other records of this time. We did original tunes. We did every song that came out," said Jordan. "See, before I got a band, I knew that what I wanted to do with it. I wanted to give my whole life to making people enjoy my music, to make you laugh and smile. So I didn't stick to what you call jazz to instrumentals. Songwriters would bring me songs with jokes to them, and I've always stuck to that, you know, entertainment." And this is Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five and Caledonia, when I find it. Here we go, Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five, right here on Waiheke Radio.
But she's my baby, and I love her just the same. Crazy about that woman, 'cause Caledonia is her name. Caledonia! Caledonia! What make your big head so hot? Ma, I love you just the same. I'll always love you, baby, 'cause Caledonia is your name.
my mama told me to leave Caledonia alone. That's what she told me, no kidding. That's what she said. She said, son, keep away from that woman. She ain't no good. Don't bother her. But mama didn't know what Caledonia was putting down. So I'm going down to Caledonia's house and ask her just one more time. Caledonia? Caledonia? What make your big head so hard?
Just one verse and a bit of screaming there from Louis Jordan and the Timpani Five and Caledonia right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Australian music journalist Toby Cresswell and presented by me, your host, Seth Tetley Jones. Next up, we've got the Flaming Lips from 2002 and Do You Realise? That's Do You Realise with two question marks afterwards. Yes. Two question marks. Very, very poignant somehow. I don't know how exactly, but maybe it just looks nice on the page. Anyway, when you visualise it with two question marks, just not just the usual one, okay? Okay, you've got that. As their name suggests, the Flaming Lips were a punk band. That was back in the mid-80s. With only meagre success to encourage them, the Lips, especially Wayne Coyne and Michael Irvins, remained steadfast. They survived college rock and grunge, coasting along the quirky angst vibe. Then, when the new rock started, the Flaming Lips just blossomed off into another direction of quirky pop. We were such amateurs that we were laughable because we had enthusiasm, said singer Wayne Coyne. It was the beginning. It was just the mess. We didn't want to be beautiful, but no way, I was singing. Come on. That's just by sheer accident that it seemed charming rather than just stupid. And there's a fine line there. It's a fine, fine line. The Flaming Lips are known for having some of the truly great multimedia shows of the time. There is no shortage of their pop ideas, including an album that could only be listened to with four synchronized CD players going at once. My God, that's creative. It's very creative, don't you think? Pursuing their own star, they arrived at the super pop sound on the Soft Bulletin in 1999. The next album, Yoshimi Battles the Pink Robots, featured Do You Realize, which is a gorgeously baroque and gentle song about the inevitability of death. Oddly, the song in the band featured in a Hewlett-Packard commercial. People treat our music like they're a football team. Our music is great and yours sucks, but we'd be listening to the Bee Gees and Barry Manilow in the car as we pulled up to a show, said Coyne. We never looked at the music was like was us against them. Our best moments are an accumulation of the Bee Gees and the Butthole Surfers. To us, that's what music was about, living at both extremes. And this is the Flaming Lips, and Do You Realize?
That you have the most
that everyone you know someday will die. It's quite poignant, actually, really, when you think about it. This is Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM, and that was The Flaming Lips and Do You Realize? This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, with me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. And, of course, the songs here were selected by the Australian music journalist, Toby Cresswell, who doesn't quite know everything about everything, as I am rapidly discovering in this book. But having said that, he does actually provide an interesting, if somewhat Australianly biased, choice here for your listening pleasure at Waiheke Radio. The next song that he's chosen for you is Squeeze and Goodbye Girl. Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook. Oh, he's put that back up there as the writing credits as well. Chris Difford and Glenn Tilbrook, ladies and gentlemen. The songwriting team behind Squeeze. And they're regularly compared with Lennon McCartney, Lieber and Stroller, and many others. And any manner of songwriting couples. The comparisons are more relevant to their structure of their partnership rather than its output. Difford wrote the lyric and Tilbrook wrote the music, and together, at their best, they captured the whimsical Britishness. Their songs were often populated by recognisable everyday English people just trying to make the best of things. In short, Squeeze were a perfect kitchen sink drama. Difford claimed Bob Dylan as a formative influence. I just love the way he could create an imaginary story that would be right there in your mind as you were listening to the song, he said. Lily, Rosemary and the Jack of Hearts for me. It's about the fantastic lyric for that particular scene in your mind, when you can play the track and you can see the film running by. And I thought I'd like to be able to do that sort of thing, to be able to create a mini film someone has heard. His writing blossomed on Cool for Cats, Squeeze's second album. So many songs had beautiful vignettes. The best of them is Goodbye Girl, a story of a bloke who scores a one-night stand and wakes up with his wallet gone and some apologising to do. Difford captures so many shades and particulars of that space of his short narrative. The excitement of picking up a girl, the abandon of the night of Terps, and terrible consequences of his relationship when he returns home. The betrayals, it's all there in that moment of waking and realizing the terrible truth of the daylight. There's a bittersweet quality to the song too, as the narrator distills the pureness of the passion of a one-night stand. Squeeze have many such moments, including Black Coffee in Bed, Up the Junction, and Tempted, but none has quite the quality of this track. This is Squeeze and Goodbye Girl.
The room was almost spinning. She pulled a
That was Squeeze and Goodbye Girl. Right here on Wahiki Radio, this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them is presented by Toby Cresswell and selected by Seth Titley-Jones. I'm always getting that round the wrong way, you know. I don't suppose it really matters much, does it? This is next up. We got T-Rex and Children of the Revolution. Children of the Revolution broke T-Rex's stride as a hit machine in 1972. Like all T-Rex songs, this was a 12-bar boogie tune that updated the classic 50s styles into something more appropriate to the 70s. Mark Bolan was T-Rex, the drummer and the bass player, notwithstanding. The whole enterprise had one purpose, which was to turn Mark Bolan into a true star. Like a true star, the message was peripheral. If he was required to be a hippie mystic, then he was. If it was required that he be a retro rocker, then he was that. And if he had been required to be a process singer, he would have been that too. The excitement he felt required as a pop star was infectious. And we felt it too. Perhaps it is signified as the beginning of apathy towards the hippie movement. Perhaps the song wasn't sexy enough. It was slightly more 50s and a little less taut than the previous T-Rex songs. Its faltering in the charts didn't, of course, better Bolan, who just went back to the well for another series of hits. Ironically, though, The Children of the Revolution is probably Bolan's best-remembered song, having been revived well by Violent Femmes and less well by others, having been used in TV commercials. It's not all just fun. There's a substance as well, said Bolan of his lyrics. It really makes you cry to know that I can't explain the stuff to people when they purchase the LP. I didn't write the nonsense for some of the English papers have inferred. Children of the Revolution is thus a heavy song, its final verse declaring, well, you can bump and grind and it's good for your mind, I drive a Rolls Royce because it's good for my voice, but you won't feel the Children of the Revolution. Whether this is meant as a critique of the aristocracy of rock or simply a boast is not clear. It probably wasn't for Bolan either. T-Rex, Children of the Revolution. There, right here on Waiheke Radio. We're broadcasting here on Waiheke Island on 88.3 and 107.4 FM. And if you're not on the island, you can actually find us live streaming at www.waihikiradio.org.nz. while you're there, you might as well like our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/WaiHikiRadio. Nothing complicated like that. Right now, if you are listening, which presumably you probably are, yeah, you're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, and Gorillaz and Clint Eastwood from 2001. I think it's for all the people behind it. It's a lab where things they really like can be put together and mutated. It's an idea that you can get away with anything as long as you do it well. That's the idea. Freedom, said Blur singer Damon Albarn. Oh, Blur. So he's not American then. Sorry, I just made the assumption because I'd forgotten. Of his side project. Isn't the animator American or something? I can't remember. Anyway, says Gorillaz, it's a liberating experience. Shall I keep doing the American accent? Oh, why not? It's a liberating experience. There are no human beings involved, so they don't get caught up with that crap about personalities and stuff. And, you know, and you just listen to the music, and if you like the idea of where the band is coming from and the comic thing, then that's great as well. Of course, This isn't actually meant to be read in an American accent. I'm just doing it because I started and then I realised. Yeah. Gorillaz was a meeting of Brit Rock and Albarn and hip-hop from Del the Funky Homo Sapien, and hip-hop and techno from producer Dan the Automator, with graphics from Tank Girl creator and comic book artist Jamie Hewlett. Like most projects of this kind, much hype followed the release of the eponymous debut album, and what's left is the killer single Clint Eastwood, which updates the special's ghost town with both reverence and cheek. This is Clint Eastwood by Gorillaz.
In a bag, I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. I ain't happy, I'm feeling glad I got sunshine. In a bag, I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on, it's 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 coming on.
Finally, someone let me out of my cage. For me it's nothing cause I'm counting no A. Nah, I couldn't be there. Nah, you shouldn't be scared. I'm good at repairs and I'm under each snare. Intangible, oh, bet no. You didn't think so, I command you to. Panoramic view, look, I'll make it all manageable. Pick and choose, sit and lose, all you different crews. Chicks and dudes, who you think is really kicking tunes. Picture you getting down in a prison tune. Like you lit the fuse. You think it's fictional, mystical, maybe spiritual. Hero who appears in you to clear your view. When you're too crazy, lifeless is only definition for what life is. Priceless to you because I put you on the high shit. You like it? Gun smoke, you're righteous with one tone. You're psychic among those, possess you with one
tone. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming on.
You have it or you don't, that's a fallacy, I'm in them. Every sprouting tree, every child of peace, every cloud and sea. You see with your eyes, I see destruction and demise. Corruption in the sky from this enterprise. Now I'm something to get lost through bustle. Not as muscle, but professional to provide. For me it's AI. Y'all
can see me now, cause you don't see with your eye. You perceive with your mind, that's the end. So I'ma stick around with Russ and be a mentor. Bust a few rhymes, but motherfucker, remember what the thought is. I brought all this so you can survive when law is lawless. Feeling sensations that you thought was dead. No squealing, remember that it's all in your head.
Hey, happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. The future is coming out. Hey, happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, not for long. My future is coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. It's coming on. My future is coming on.
That was Gorillaz and Clint Eastwood, or as I'm sure most of you out there, I know I am, I prefer to think of it as, you know, that one that goes, I'm happy, feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. Because really, I didn't listen to it very carefully, maybe I should have, but what's it really got to do with Clint Eastwood? Is there some, you know, some reference to Dirty Harry in there or something? I don't know. Not, I'll just leave that to you and your speculating minds. And continue our musical journey this evening with Miss Misery by Elliot Smith. Singer-songwriter Elliot Smith seemed to come from nowhere, and suddenly he was singing Miss Misery at the Academy Awards. Smith, 28, from Portland, Oregon, was making alternative rock records for some time when he was discovered by filmmaker Gus Van Sant, who used his music on the film Good Will Hunting. Smith was ideal for the job. His songs have an intimacy and candor and a powerful combination. His vocals were almost whispered, muffled like the child who was afraid to speak out. There was a haunting quality to Elliot Smith even then. Smith joined the pantheon of doomed singer-songwriters in October 2003 when he stabbed himself twice in the heart. For many years, Smith had battled with drug addictions, alcohol, heroin, and reputedly cocaine. Then there were rumors and suggestions, not least in his lyrics, that his childhood had been so unhappy that he had never really recovered from it. The haunting quality is there in all of Smith's work, including Miss Misery. It's a song that works on a number of levels. He allows us just to become intimate by degree. It's a sort of song. I sort of do my thing and I don't really care what it is, he told Barney Hoskins. I do know that if you're not in a band and you play acoustic guitar, there's even more inclination to box you into a corner than if you're in a band. Playing acoustically definitely makes it possible to be more sensitive, but it doesn't mean that it's any more sentimental. This is Elliot Smith and Miss Misery.
I'll fake it through the day with some help from Johnny Walker Red. Send the poison rain down the drain to put bad thoughts in my head. The two tickets torn in half a lot, and nothing to do. Do you miss me? Miss misery like you say. Park, read the line. seen in a magazine that you left lying around. I don't have you with me, but I keep a good attitude. Do you miss me? Misery, like you say.
Elliot Smith and Miss Misery right here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. You're listening to 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by Seth Tetley Jones. The Prodigy and Firestarter from 1996. Liam Howlett is the brain behind The Prodigy. His singular gift is to use electronic music to express emotion. In his case, a passionate misanthropy. Howlett has a chip on his shoulder, and he made angry techno. He used hip-hop and rock sounds. It wasn't just about the beat anymore. The result of Prodigy was dancer vocalists Keith Flint. The rest of The Prodigy were dancer vocalists Keith Flint, Leroy Thornhill, and Maxim Reality. The former's spiky hair and copious facial piercings made him look genuinely menacing. The Fat of the Land was one of the high points of electronica. The Chemical Brothers had the other. And it is the signature tune was Firestarter. The Fat of the Land, of course, is album that Firestarter is off by The Prodigy, which featured Flint on vocals. The song had the relentless, mind-numbing techno beat amped up by a notch. With Flint's vocals, it also moved further towards rock, and it was nasty. The music track was built around the rocking Breeders song, SOS, and the Art of Noise's dark electronic mood, Moments in Love. Howlett told Ben Thompson in his book 7 Years of Plenty, he, open square brackets, Flint, close square brackets, expresses himself on stage dancing, but I guess he felt like he'd done as much as he could in that area, and he just needed something else to let himself go with. When he first said he wanted to have a go at doing some vocals, I didn't realise how serious he was, but then he came round to my house and we both sat down and wrote the lyrics. Basically, they're just a description of Keith and what happens with him on stage, the way he is and his headstrong personality. That record sums him up. We didn't go out and write the song you could play on the piano. The records I've always liked are the ones that you can't sing along to. This is The Prodigy and Firestarter.
white tape. Yeah. On the plane, get tasty. Belly intoxicated. I'm a fire starter. Top with me, fire starter. You're a fire starter. Twisted fire starter.
Was The Prodigy and Firestarter right here on Waiheke Radio, and this is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Cresswell and presented by yours truly, Seth Tetley Jones. Björk and Big Time Sensuality. A lot of my songs, including Big Time Sensuality, are about my fringe. Is Björk meant to have a Dutch accent? She's Icelandic. I don't think... Oh... I'm not sure if I can do an Icelandic accent this early in the evening thing. So I'll just stick with it. About my fringe, not my lovish, said Björk to the Record Collector magazine. It's not erotic or sensual, even if it may sound like that. As you know, you create pretty deep, full-on love relationships with fringe. A lot is also about myself. I can be a coward a lot of the time, and there comes a moment when I write a song and when I get quite brave. It's a lot about me dealing with myself rather than attacking people. Would I like to know the future? No. There's a side of me that likes to plan a little bit ahead, and there is a side of me that just needs to be free. I've got problems with booking airline tickets. I always change them. Sometimes I wonder if it's just for me to feel free. That kind of not to be nailed is really important to me. It was the first time of courage for the Icelandic singer. After arriving on the world stage 5 years earlier in the Sugar Cubes, Björk set out on her own. She had initially been a solo artist, cutting her first album at the age of 11, and the time she opted to work with soul-to-soul Svengali Nelly Hooper, and together they crafted a pop record unlike any heard before. Brassy, with jazz and R&B flavours inside an avant-rock flamework, debut is haunting and beguiling. Debut is the album. Her debut album, actually, well, not quite. Her debut album was at the age of 11, but her big, big first album. In my head, there were all of these little ideas that I had to be completed or I would go mad, said the singer. I was always happy singing with the Sugar Cubes and being a housewife in Iceland and making film music. But slowly, I began to feel that I had to do this thing to get my songs out. Otherwise, I would feel guilty for the rest of my life. And to do this properly, I had to move to London. It's very precious to me, this album. It may be the only album I ever make, so I want to do it right. I met this guy in LA and I fell in love with him, but he turned out to be Nelly's best friend. So when he brought me back to London, he introduced us. I would probably have never thought of Nelly, because what he has done in the past has been too sophisticated, too tasteful to compare it to what I was thinking. I was bored to death with the current pop music. But when I got to know Nelly, I felt that he was the person who could do the whole thing with me. So I ended up dropping everybody else. I'll work with them later, but it became a bit of a Björk Nelly affair. I start the songs, and he finishes them. This is Björk and Big Time Sensuality.
I
Björk and Big Time Sensuality here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as selected by Toby Creswell and presented by Seth Tetley-Jones. Next up, Randy Newman and I Think It's Going to Rain Today. This emotionally charged track was a little out of place in Randy Newman's songbook. It was a song worthy of Bacharach or Gershwin, and it's the introspection and melancholy that jars with the rest of Newman's songwriting. Judy Collins has a hit with the track in 1966, bringing a folky wistfulness and poignancy to the piece. It was also a minor hit for Barbara Streisand and was well interpreted by Dusty Springfield and Nina Simone. On his live set, Randy Newman achieves this time-stopping moment. The appreciative audience, who has been talking throughout the set, fall completely silent. Newman's piano is so spare that he seems to be sketching the melody with zen brushstrokes. While the humour in many of Newman's songs has worn thin through familiarity, I Think It's Going to Rain Today remains just as poignant and powerful as ever. I used to think that it was just a summer for a college boy, romantic misery somehow, Newman said recently of the tune. But it's not bad, you know, scarecrows are dressed in the latest style. It's just the fact that the song uses the word implore, and it's almost outside the vocabulary you use for pop music nowadays. This is Randy Newman, and I Think It's Going to Rain Today. Randy Newman, and I Think It's Going to Rain Today. You're with Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4, and we're reaching toward the end of 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them. But we do have time for Buddy Holly and the Crickets and Peggy Sue. Buddy Holly stands apart from the 50s pack of rock and roll stars. Only Chuck Berry wrote as well and prolifically as Holly. Holly was not a hellraiser, and at least not in public. Indeed, his death death happened in part because he wanted to catch the plane to the next concert date so that he could do his laundry. Halley was, however, spectacular in his own right. He was the prototype for the rock and roll bands of the future. The Beatles were strongly influenced by him, as were most UK artists of the time, not least the Hollies, who borrowed his name. Piggy Sue is one of Holly's signature tunes. The country influence is strong in the hiccuping vocal that echoes the rockabilly drumming from Jerry Allison, and the playing from Holly Allison and bassist Joby Maudlin, and the grungy Tex-Mex sound that is resolved in the chorus into pure pop. Buddy Holly and the Crickets and Peggy Sue. Buddy Holly and the Crickets and Peggy Sue here on Waiheke Radio 88.3 and 107.4 FM. This is 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, as presented by Toby Cresswell and selected by Seth Titley-Jones. Now, for our last track this evening is the Beastie Boys and Hey Ladies from 1989. Most people viewed Paul's Boutique as a total commercial failure. Mike. Oh, I thought it was some record reviewer. Anyway, he told that to ID Magazine. But it was necessary for us to get us where we are now. Mike Diamond is talking from the perspective of the Beastie Boys being hippest white group on the planet in the 90s. Their debut, License to Ill, was a teenage dream, crunching rap music and heavy metal and mocking anything that moved. 3 years later, they showed with Paul's Boutique that the white middle class kids could understand rap music. Hey Ladies has that Beastie Boys irreverence, and the video is loaded with 70s iconography. It's like a dream set in a second-hand store, but so is the music. Of course, many of the group's fans couldn't understand the dense mix of sounds without the crunch. On the first record, the Beastie Boys were obnoxious kids fighting for the right to party. Actually, he put that song into his book earlier on, if you've been listening, and you'll be able to hear it again in a few weeks, because, like I said, after this week, I'm going to be playing repeats of my shows from earlier on so that you have a chance to catch up. on Hey Ladies, there's still this sort of obnoxious, but there's also very smart here with the samples. But the Beastie Boys were ahead of the curve here. In partnership with Dust Brothers, the New York trio constructed an album of samples from all over the place, but with a unique sensibility. Paul's Boutique didn't have any hits and didn't sell well, but it demonstrates that the Beastie Boys had a talent beyond being obnoxious. And this is the Beastie Boys and Hey Ladies. This is the Beastie Boys and Hey Ladies, and this has been 1001 Songs, the great songs of all time, and the artists, the stories, and the secrets behind them, with me, your host, Seth Tetley-Jones. I will be back next week at 8 p.m. on Monday evenings, but before then, there will be my repeat at Saturday afternoons at 2 p.m.